Bright beams of light emanate from a golden torch held high in the raised hand of a woman draped in a Grecian toga. Columbia, a Sony Pictures Entertainment Company. Columbia Pictures presents a Hofland Pallone production, an indelible picture. Starring Jodie Foster, Forrest Whitaker, Dwight Yoakam, and Jared Leto. Panic Room. The high-rise buildings of New York. Far below, heavy traffic runs along roads surrounding the tall buildings. Distinctive yellow cabs stand out amongst the steady stream of vehicles. Also starring Kristen Stewart, Anne Magnusson, Ian Buchanan, Patrick Bouchot, and Paul Schultze. A towering, tiered building made of pale stone, then a glass-fronted facade reflecting the bright sunshine. Now, two women are hurrying down a busy street, followed by a teenage girl on a scooter.
I wrote it all down. 4,200 square feet, four floors, perfect. Courtyard and back, south-facing gardens, perfect.
Shouldn't we just wait for the car service?
No, we'll sit in traffic forever.
Is that the listing sheet?
There is no listing sheet. I heard about it this morning. It'll be gone by this afternoon.
Well, how many more after this one?
None. You know how tight the market is.
Sarah, do you have to ride that here?
Mom, we're in the street.
A man's at the door of an imposing townhouse.
One day you will learn to respect people's time, my dear. One day you will realize that the world does not stop and start at your convenience.
Oh, I am so sorry.
I'm meeting Arthur Digby Lawrence in 26 minutes, and if you think Arthur Digby Lawrence is the kind of man who tolerates tardiness, you are sadly mistaken.
You are a saint to waste it. Hey.
Hello.
They enter the house.
It's kind of between townhouse and brownstone. We like to call it a townstone, built in 1879. This is the middle of the house, the parlor floor. Here is the living room. Formal dining is in the back, casual dining below, and a kitchen floor, which was renovated in 94 with all the expected amenities. There are two bedroom floors above.
Oh my God, it's amazing.
Hey, kid, no scooter.
Well, I don't have to tell you this amount of living space is extremely uncommon in Manhattan.
It's got a yard. Sort of.
Which is in a bit of disarray, but then again, 21-foot lot, 53 deep, which allows for an expansive garden. Working elevator. The previous owner was disabled the last years of his life. Highly unusual, the elevator. You will not find this in 90% of brownstones. Perhaps it is something of a fixer-upper, but we do anticipate an enormous amount of interest. It's a very emotional property. Shall we have a look at the rest?
He heads off up the staircase.
You should make an offer immediately.
But can I see it first?
Believe me, there's nothing remotely like this on the market right now. You can't move from Greenwich to the Upper West Side and expect to still have a house and a yard and a dog and a cat, but here it is. It's got everything you told me you wanted and more. You'll have another family. My God, you could have two.
It's a fortune.
Mom, it's not Barney's. You don't have to pay the price on the tag.
Sarah scoots past them and gets into the elevator.
He can afford it.
It would be so lovely if I could show the property before I leave.
Lydia and Meg head up the staircase after him.
Hardwood floors throughout, as many as six working fireplaces. This is the top floor, two bedrooms, one at either end. They share one small bath. Originally, this would have been the servants' quarters. The previous owner kept a small nursing staff. I don't know if you have live-in help.
No, it's just the two of us.
They go back downstairs.
Third floor, spare bedroom, den, what have you. Mr. Perlstein used this as an office.
He's talking about Sidney Perlstein, the financier.
May I ask what you do, Mrs.
Altman? Well, actually, I'm going back to school. Columbia.
Her husband's in pharmaceuticals.
Oh.
I didn't realize you were Stephen Norton's wife.
Yes, until recently.
Master Bath.
He leads them into a bathroom.
Pearlstein's been in all the papers since he died. His kids are suing each other over the estate. He was a recluse, rich, paranoid. Now it turns out they can't find out his money.
I hardly see how family gossip has germane to showing the property.
Stop calling it the property. It sounds ridiculous.
Walk-in closet.
They move through to another bedroom.
Could the little one please stop that?
Kid, no elevator!
And we emerge in the master suite.
Pale sunlight filters into the airy, high-ceilinged room. Meg frowns as she looks at a wall.
Huh. That's strange.
What?
Meg peers out into the hallway, then looks back at the wall.
Is this room smaller than it should be?
You're the first person to notice.
On Caravan, no one from our office had the slightest idea.
He presses on a mirror and a heavy door opens. He gestures to the two women to enter the small dark room beyond, then switches on a neon light.
It's called a panic room.
What?
A safe room. A castle keep in medieval time.
I've read about these.
They're quite in vogue in high-end construction right now. One really can't be too careful about home invasion.
This is perfect. The alarm goes off in the middle of the night. What are you going to do? Call the police and wait till Tuesday? Traipse downstairs in your underthings to check it out? I think not.
Board concrete walls? Buried phone line not connected to the house's main line. You can call the police, nobody can cut you off. You have your own ventilation system, a bank of surveillance monitors that covers nearly every corner of the house.
This whole thing makes me nervous. Why? Ever read any Poe?
No, but I loved her last album.
What's to keep somebody from prying open the door?
Steel. Thick steel. Very thick steel. Full battery backup. So even if the power's off, it's still functional.
Oh, my God. Old Sydney didn't miss a trick, did he?
Open it, please.
And with kids like he's apparently got, no wonder he wanted a place to hide.
Please open the door.
That is highly inappropriate.
Open the door, please.
Evan presses a button and the door slides open. Sarah's outside.
My room. Definitely my room.
This is really dangerous.
That door is a hazard.
Not at all.
Whoa.
Motion detector, like an elevator. Won't let the door close if somebody's blocking it. There's another one at your ankles. It couldn't be safer.
Evan slides the inner door shut again, and the heavy outer door swings closed behind it, trapping him and Sarah inside the panic room. Outside, Meg looks at her reflection in the mirror on the door.
I know they'll take asking price.
Now it's nighttime, and a large removals van pulls away in the street outside. Inside the imposing brownstone townhouse, Meg picks up the phone in the kitchen. She's in her late 30s with bobbed mousy hair and glasses.
It's working.
I hooked up the phone!
Good for you, Mom. Hooked up a phone.
579 what?
3000.
Sarah pours herself a soda.
Hey. Enough.
Sarah puts the can down and picks at her pizza.
Mind the pizza?
What do you mean?
Our first night, I should have thought of something special.
I like pizza.
Meg glances at her daughter, who goes back to eating the pizza. They're sitting at a counter in the kitchen. Meg has a half-empty glass of wine in front of her and is running her fingers through her hair thoughtfully. Sarah stares at her.
Fuck 'em.
Don't.
Fuck her, too.
I agree. But don't.
Meg takes the can of soda and pours some into Sarah's glass. Then, with her head resting on her hand, she looks up at her daughter. Both pick up their glasses in a silent toast. Now the dark, echoey staircase.
Don't you think this place has way too many stairs?
Well, you didn't carry anything up them.
You know,
know, you never did ask me what I thought of this house.
It's because I didn't want you to tell me you hated it.
I liked our old house.
So did I. You know what I was thinking? I was thinking we could stencil a whole bookcase. And we could cut the stencils to ourselves. Go ahead.
Sarah's sitting cross-legged on her bed with a towel wrapped around her head.
I forgot to set up that tour of your new school.
Dad already did it. I'm going with him on Sunday.
Oh, yeah?
So I'll just take a cab and meet him there.
Is that what he said?
Isn't that what's so great about Manhattan? You don't have to drive me everywhere.
I'll ride with you.
Why'd you bring me here if I can't go anywhere on my own?
That's it. I quit. I'm not fighting with you till tomorrow. Come here. It's disgusting how much I love you.
Tell me about it.
Meg kisses Sarah on the forehead, then heads towards the door.
Mom?
Yeah?
It's too dark.
While Sarah watches her mum from the bed, Meg goes over to the closet, opens the door and turns on a bare light bulb inside. Sarah rests her head on the pillow and pulls the duvet up around her.
Better?
It's better.
Meg heads out of the room, leaving the door ajar behind her. Sarah turns over in bed and shuts her eyes. Elsewhere in the house, Meg lifts up a heavy cardboard box and carries it down the long, dimly lit hallway. Midway, she stops and looks up at the rain pounding down on a large domed skylight above her. Now she's in the master bedroom, sitting on the floor, drinking wine as she unpacks her belongings from the cardboard boxes. She drops her cell phone charger on the floor, then pulls out a framed photograph and looks at it sadly. It's a picture of Sarah as a toddler. She reaches under her bed to plug in the charger. Numerous photos of Sarah as a baby are now lined up on the bedside table. Meg puts her phone on to charge, then shakes a sheet out on her bed, then smooths down the billowing grey material. In the panic room, a fine green beam of light stretches across the doorway. Now Meg's bed is made up, but boxes still lie strewn across the floor of the spacious room. The walk-in closet is filled with bags and half-unpacked suitcases. A half-empty wine glass and bottle rest on the floor of the ensuite bathroom. An ornate bath with claw feet sits on a raised platform at the edge of the room. Meg's lying back in the water, staring sadly into space. She lets out a sob, then quickly wipes her face with both hands and reaches down for her glass of wine, then gulps down the remaining liquid. Holding a manual, Meg presses buttons on a control panel.
Bypass non-ready zone. Shut. Enter.
She looks over at the open door of the panic room.
Oops. Bypass non-ready zone. Shut. Enter zone number. Shut again.
A bank of monitors come to life in the panic room.
In the morning, I gotta figure out how to turn this thing off.
Later, as rain batters the window, the digital display on the clock turns to 1:27. Meg rolls over in her sleep, one arm hanging over the edge of her bed. Her empty wine glass sits on the floor below. Now moving across the hardwood floor of her bedroom and out into the hallway. Moving on, down through the house to the lower ground level, two floors below. A car pulls up outside the large barred windows facing the street and someone gets out. A second shadowy figure opens the gate, pauses looking into the house, then makes his way past the windows to the door. He tries the door, but it's locked. He goes back over to the other man, who's still by the windows. The second man presses his face up against the glass and peers into the house. Then he strides off again. Now moving through the open-plan kitchen, passing a block of knives and a coffee machine. Onwards past the sink and the dining table to the French doors at the back of the house. One of the men appears and rattles the handles. He moves over past another door and heads up a flight of metal steps. Now on the ground floor above, he tries the back door. He reaches up and pulls down the metal fire escape ladder. Visible through the glass panels of the door, he starts to climb up the ladder. On the next floor up in the master bedroom, the grey bedding moves as Meg shifts in her sleep. Moving on up to the second floor and a domed skylight above the hallway. A silhouette appears through the opaque glass panels and makes its way around the skylight. In a small side room off the hallway below, a crowbar slides through the edge of a metal trapdoor in the ceiling. Sparks fly as the door swings open. Then a message flashes up on the alarm control panel by Meg's bed. She stirs but remains fast asleep. The door of the side room slowly opens and the bigger of the two men emerges into the hallway. He creeps along the passage towards the stairs, still carrying the crowbar. He begins to make his way downstairs, then something makes him stop and look around. He stares into a bathroom, noticing a nightlight plugged into the wall and a removals box sitting on the floor. He glances round in disbelief. Meg wakes up. She sits up groggily in bed, then wipes her hand over her face and reaches for the bottle of water on her bedside table. As she takes a sip, on the floor above, the intruder pushes open the door to Sarah's room. He stares at her lying fast asleep in bed, then quietly pulls the door back to its original position. On the floor below, Meg turns over and opens her eyes. As she stares into space, behind her a shadow stops at the door of her room, then moves off again. She squeezes her eyes shut and rolls over to face the door. The man with the crowbar continues on down the stairs. He pauses on the bottom step before heading towards the door where his accomplice is waiting outside.
Christ! Amateur.
On the alarm panel, a message flashes up saying, Zone 1 disabled.
We got a problem. We need to talk.
Fine.
A third man knocks at the window.
Who's that?
This is Raul.
Who the fuck is Raul?
Raul is okay. Raul has experience.
Where'd you get him?
Through some people.
I opened the fucking door.
The second man, Junior, spots something.
Hey, no shit. little girl on the top floor. There's a woman on the third. They're both asleep. They're not supposed to be here. This is your department, Junior. They are not supposed to be here. Videotape.
What?
We're on videotape. We built all videotapes that we got within 10 feet of this place. And the tapes are upstairs.
Fucking escrow.
Fuck to me, man.
Fucking escrow, man. That's almost 3 weeks. They should not be in here for another week.
How? Exactly how? It's 14 days, 3 weeks.
Business days. Escrow is always business days. 5 day weeks, always.
Raoul, who's in a ski mask, leans against the wall.
Right. Out of here.
Wait, look, what? Just wait, 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 wait. We can handle this. We can handle this. Now, can we still handle this?
It's just a woman and a kid.
Unless Daddy comes home.
Daddy's not coming home. They're in the middle of a divorce. Daddy's banging some fucking B-model on the Upper Side, right? It's just her and the kid. Now, can we do this?
Yeah, we can do it.
Now, we're people here. And up with me.
Upstairs, Meg swings her legs over the side of the bed and sits up.
Wait, wait, stop. 20 minutes.
Can unpack my bags.
Nothing. So, we keep an eye on her. Raoul can totally administrate that part.
I don't want Raoul to administrate that part. He's not even supposed to be here.
Meg gets up.
Nobody gets hurt.
What about us? What if she has a gun?
Raoul unzips his jacket to show his gun.
Who are you?
I'm Raoul.
Upstairs, Meg shuffles groggily into the panic room and switches on the glaring neon light. She flinches, then heads out again, squinting, and not noticing that on one of the monitors, the three intruders are in full view.
You know we can't do this without you. This is still a good plan. You know, fuck that, this is a great plan. It's just it's got a slight twist.
Yeah. Felony kidnapping. 30 years.
You make a lot of promises, don't you, huh, man? You promise me, you promise your kids.
No family.
All right, you're right, okay, you're right. It's all fucked up, I'm fine. Fucked up! It's not how it's supposed to be.
Meg pads across her bedroom in her bare feet.
But the fact of the matter is, there's still $3 million in this house, and no one but you and I even knows it's here. I want that money. I want it. But you need that money. Or have you forgotten why you're here? So let's just quit dicking around, okay? Get this over with.
Junior steps back to let Burnham think about it for a moment.
Kill the phones.
In her bathroom upstairs, Meg picks up a bottle of pills, shakes them, then puts them down again and selects another container. She takes a pill, then puts her head under the tap to wash it down. Then she wanders over to the toilet. As she sits down, the three men are making their way quietly upstairs. Meg yawns. The men reach the first landing, and Junior peers upwards before carefully continuing onwards. Meg stands up and lowers the toilet lid. Then she feels around for the flush, running her hands over the white porcelain of the cistern. At the sound of the flush, the three men stop dead in their tracks and stare up towards where the sound is coming from. Meg goes back into her bedroom and flops down on the bed. Her eyes flicker open again, and she sits up, shielding them from the glare coming from the panic room. She gets up and goes over to the room. On the landing downstairs, the three men stand rooted to the spot, listening. As Meg flicks off the light, the bank of monitors catches her eye. She moves closer. Downstairs, casually chewing gum, Junior heads off again and Burnham follows him. Meg's noticed the intruders on the monitors. As they begin to slowly move down the hallway again, she leans in closer to the image on the screen, touching it with her finger. Intent on staring upwards, Junior accidentally catches his foot on a basketball. On the monitor, Meg sees it bounce down to the lower ground floor. She spins round fearfully. The three men peer upwards again, waiting for a reaction. Now Meg's trembling with fear as she watches the men carry on up the stairs. They pause at the bottom of the flight leading to her room. Suddenly, Meg races across the hallway just above them.
Tough one, little girl. I've got the mother. Come here. You stay here. Nobody gets past.
Meg runs up the stairs to Sarah's room, and Junior and Raoul race up after her. She throws open the bedroom door and starts to shake Sarah. In desperation, Meg splashes water onto Sarah's face.
What are you there for?
Meg drags her out of bed and pulls her across the landing, then comes face to face with Raoul.
Where are you going, huh?
Downstairs, Junior cocks his gun. Meg pulls Sarah into the elevator. She presses the button just in time for Raoul to see them descend.
What's going on? People in the house.
Hey! Down.
On the floor below, Junior races towards the elevator and frantically presses the button to make it stop. As they glide down past him, he heaves in vain at the door handle, putting his foot up against it to gain more leverage. Then he shouts down to Burnham.
Yeah! Ah, fuck! Coming down to you!
Hey, I told you, I don't hurt people.
Junior runs down to join him.
They're going downstairs.
That room. The panic room. No, you've got to press emergency stop.
Seeing the elevator start to move upwards again, Junior races back up the stairs.
Coming back up!
As soon as the elevator hits the first floor, Meg heaves open the door, then runs into her bedroom and onwards past the ensuite bathroom. Raoul sets off in one direction. Junior tries to head them off from the other, but Meg and Sarah pile into the panic room, hitting the button just before he gets there.
Damn it, mother!
Meg and Sarah sit huddled together as outside Junior tries to stop the heavy metal outer door from closing, smashing the mirror in the process.
That's 7 years bad luck.
In his anger, Junior overturns Meg's bed, knocking her cell phone onto the floor, where it skids into a small gap under the bedstead. Burnham comes to join the others and looks at the panic room.
Tell me they're not in there.
Chewing ominously on his gum, Junior turns to glare at him. Burnham quickly strides over to the control panel by Meg's bed. Meg sees a message flash up on the panel inside the room. System disabled. She picks up the phone.
Oh, damn. It doesn't work.
It's a different phone line. I never hooked it up.
Burnham goes back over to Junior.
Now what?
Junior hands the gun to Raoul, who turns to face the panic room, then slips it back into his holster. On the other side of the wall, sitting beneath the black and white monitors, Meg puts her head in her hands. Sometime later, Meg puts her ear against the metal door.
I can't hear a thing. What do you think they want?
I don't know. Rob us.
I don't know.
What do we do?
We wait.
What if they get in here?
No, they can't. No, they can't. They can't get in here. That's not a possibility. There's
Mom,
no way.
I heard you.
Meg crouches down in front of her.
Feel okay?
Yeah.
Shaky?
No.
Chills?
Uh-uh. Please, don't worry about me.
Sarah stands up and goes to look at the monitors. After a moment, Meg comes to join her. They can see Burnham making his way downstairs. Junior and Raoul are in the living room.
got kids. What do you think he's gonna do? Hang out here when the cops waltz in? Use your head.
Okay.
Here he comes.
Lock the roof access. She's not getting down from there.
Good.
Why wouldn't she be in there right now calling the cops?
Could she have hooked it up this afternoon?
No, she couldn't. Look, you don't just call up Bed Atlantic. She would have to do it through Manhattan Security, which is my company. I checked the paperwork. The phone in there is not connected.
You see? There you go. She couldn't have.
I thought she wasn't even gonna be here.
He said she wasn't gonna be here.
Hey, fuck you and fuck you. She is not supposed to...
Hey.
Meg points at a button marked All Page.
Do it.
Yeah, me and a couple...
Excuse me. The police are on their way.
Burnham goes to stand under the camera on the lower ground floor and stares up into it.
She's lying.
You're full of...
The monitor relays Junior's gestures.
It's not an intercom. It's a PA system.
I know. I'm just scaring her.
I suggest you leave before they get here.
Burnham gestures that he knows the phone's not working.
What? He's saying that we don't have a phone. How could he know that?
Take what you want and get out.
Well, if only it were that easy.
What's some paper? Piece of paper. Piece of paper. Hey, Zorro, you gonna help us out here? You got a piece of paper?
Junior grabs a sheet from one of the removal boxes.
What is he doing? I don't know.
Junior holds up a sign saying, "What we want," then holds up another one, "is in that room."
What we want is in that room.
They're coming in here, aren't they?
No, no, they can't. I told you, they can't get in here.
What do you know about this room?
Oh, what do we know about this room? Well, about this room, just a few small details.
Meg and Sarah watch the monitor intently as Junior disappears from view for a moment. He reappears with a sign that reads, "More than you."
We're not coming out.
And we're not letting you in. Get out of my house!
Say fuck.
Fuck!
Junior looks at Raoul.
Mom, get the fuck out of my house.
Get the fuck out of my house!
She looks at her daughter, half apologetically.
Okay, I have an idea. She's a woman. Women need security.
She's not gonna believe it.
Just needs to know she's dealing with decent people, and she can trust us.
He holds up a sign saying, "We will let you go." Meg and Sarah look at each other.
Conversation's over.
What? She's not coming down?
Shut up. Will you please shut up and let me think?
Yeah, like that's gonna help you think.
Okay, you know what? Fine. You think.
What if she did call the cops?
She didn't.
She just said it again, that she called the cops.
If there was any chance that the cops were on their way, do you think I would still be standing
here? Okay, fine, good, excellent. We all believe you. How do we get into that room?
Hey. What is funny about this? Is this shit funny to you?
I spent the last 12 years of my life building these rooms specifically to keep out people like us.
Oh, it's all so ironic and amusing, okay? Now, how do we get in? We can't.
Can't get in the panic room. That's the whole point. We have to get her to come out.
And why would you do that?
I don't know. But when she does, she can't get out of this house. We keep her here. Keep her quiet for 20 minutes. And I don't want any help from Joe Pesci over here. They want to hold up this house. Fine. We make it impossible for them to leave.
And why would they come out in the first place?
I'm working on that.
A metal box attached to the wall is rattling. Meg slams her hand down on it.
Are you okay? Small space.
I'm okay.
You can't wake out.
I know.
I mean it.
I won't.
You know, people never get buried alive anymore. I guess it used to happen all the time.
Really?
Yeah, I read that.
And when did this happen all the time?
20, 30 years ago.
What are they doing now?
Sarah looks up at the monitors, then stands up. Meg stands up as well, and the two of them watch the intruders moving around the house. Burnham heaves his heavy bag of tools onto the kitchen counter. He empties everything out. He tests an electric drill, then empties out a small bag of screws, picks a few up and heads off. Rain is pounding on the terrace outside the French windows. Burnham comes to the doors and tries them, but they're locked fast. He reaches up with his drill. Meg and Sarah are watching. He inserts screws at the top and bottom of the doors. Junior fastens all the bolts on the door, then jams a long metal pole up against it. On the various monitors, Meg and Sarah see Burnham walk through the open-plan kitchen and on towards the windows at the front of the house. Junior slides a sofa in front of another door, while Raoul screws shut the casement windows on the floor above. As he does so, he notices people and cars passing by on the road outside. Realizing he's visible, he lowers the drapes. In the panic room, Meg crouches down on the floor.
This is not happening.
Sarah throws open a chest. Inside is a fire blanket and various provisions. She opens another one.
Sarah, calm down. You know what could happen if you let yourself get worked up. Sarah!
Holding a bottle of liquid, Sarah looks at her mother. Becoming aware of the sound of pounding coming from below, they both lie down to press their ears to the floor and listen. Far below, Raoul's smashing at the ceiling with a sledgehammer. Burnham sets down two heavy bags and comes in.
What the hell are you doing? We're coming in from below.
No, you're not. Even if you got through the concrete, there's 3 inches of steel. You won't even make a dent.
We'll see.
Hey, this is what I do. Okay, if some idiot with a sledgehammer could break in, do you really think that I would still have a job?
Raoul punches more holes in the ceiling.
Dude, don't get any of that in your eye.
Then Burnham spots something outside the French windows. He goes over and peers at a gas cylinder sitting under a barbecue on the terrace. He spins round to say something to Raoul and Junior, then decides against it. In the panic room, Meg and Sarah raise their heads from the floor looking worried. Then Meg notices tiny grains of mortar coming away from between the breeze blocks in one wall.
Neighbor.
Help! No, please! Help me!
Call the police!
You hear us?
The police!
Help her!
Elsewhere, Burnham looks out of a window, then pulls the drapes shut.
Help! Help us, please!
They stop and wait for a response. Then Meg sits down again with a hopeless look on her face. In her bedroom outside, Burnham switches on a spotlight, directing it at the wall of the panic room. Meg turns and notices the light on one of the monitors. She can see Burnham knocking on the wall. He runs his gloved hand down the wall thoughtfully, then steps back. Meanwhile, Raoul's reached the steel of the panic room floor.
Shit!
Burnham walks past him and Junior calmly. Junior watches, intrigued, as Burnham unscrews the French doors and heads out onto the patio. Raoul crouches down to watch him too. Burnham comes back inside with the gas cylinder and a long length of coiled hose, then calmly walks out past them again.
You guys just gonna stand there? Why, what do you got, MacGyver?
Raoul puts down his sledgehammer, and he and Junior follow Burnham into Meg's bedroom. Burnham sets down the gas cylinder and opens his bag of tools. He pulls out a claw hammer and starts smashing at the wall of the panic room. Meg and Sarah watch the monitor in horror. The plasterboard quickly begins to come away from the wall.
He can't get in here with a hammer, can he?
Meg shakes her head. Outside, Burnham's come to a series of pipes.
Could you be any louder?
Burnham just looks at him, then crouches down to fit an attachment to his drill.
Come here with those boxes.
Listen, goddammit. I'm in charge here. Now what the hell is going on?
Burnham puts a pillow against the pipes and begins to drill.
They're gonna get in here.
No, they can't. They can't get in here.
A watch-like monitor on Sarah's wrist.
Maybe just fine.
Feathers are flying in the room outside as Burnham drills through the pillow. Then he turns and nods at Raoul, who goes to pick up the length of hose. Burnham throws the pillow to the floor and looks at a small, neat hole he's drilled into the wall. Inside the room, Meg and Sarah crawl over to the monitors again. Behind them, high above their heads, small white feathers begin to drift out of a grate. Burnham attaches one end of the hose to the wall, while Raoul fixes the other end to the nozzle of the gas cylinder. Burnham tosses him a roll of gaffer tape. Junior watches as Raoul seals the join between the nozzle and the hose.
Oh, this is good. This could work.
I was just thinking that
we should do something like this.
Burnham turns on the gas.
Open it.
I just did.
Open it some more.
We're just sending him a message. You'll get the point.
The gas travels from the cylinder down the length of hose, snaking across the floor of Meg's bedroom and into the hole in the wall. From there, it floats upwards in the air conditioning shaft towards the grate in the wall. A single feather is carried along with it into the panic room, where Meg and Sarah are still watching the monitors intently. Meg turns to look up at the grate.
Down on the ground.
Closing the lid of a crate, she steps up onto it and peers up at the vent.
All right, quit picking around and open this fucking thing up.
Don't be stupid.
Quiet.
I'm trying to scare him. We're not trying to kill him.
Meg holds her nose up to the vent.
What is it?
Nobody is gonna die, man. Will you please have the balls to follow through with something?
Thinking fast, Sarah wrenches at a metal box at the bottom of a wall. It comes away, exposing a small hole leading to the outside world.
Mom.
They lie down beside the hole, gasping at the fresh air.
Worst that's gonna happen is they'll pass out, they'll have a hangover.
How are we gonna get in there if they pass out, Junior?
Cut it back a little.
They're not gonna pass out, no nuts. They'll throw up first.
He's right! We can't get in the room if they're dead!
Stay on the ground and breathe.
Meg climbs up onto the crate and starts masking over the vent with tape.
Turn it down. Turn it down, damn it! It's too much!
Don't you start up with this shit.
Turn it down, both of you!
Meg fixes another length of tape to the vent, then jumps down to the floor again.
I'll turn it down.
Hey, get his ass off him!
I'm not killing anybody.
As Meg's covering up another vent, the pressure of the gas splits the tape on the first one. She drops to the floor, gasping for breath.
You need to tell that to Larry,
turn this shit off!
No.
Turn it down!
Now, Meg's searching frantically through one of the survival crates. Sarah turns to watch her mother. Finally, Meg pulls out a gas lighter.
Mom?
Just a sec.
Mom? Get into this.
The fire blanket.
Oh, my God.
That's fuck right, you amateurs, man! I tried to tell
it myself! Fucking idea! Turn it down!
Meg rips off the vent, then covering herself with another fire blanket, reaches into the shaft with the gas lighter.
Shut the fuck up! There are people trying to sleep over there!
The tip of the gas lighter hits the back wall of the shaft. As the men outside listen, Meg tries desperately to stretch her arm around the corner. Junior presses his ear against the wall. Inside the shaft, Meg's frantically flicking at the gas lighter's switch.
What is that?
Turn the gas off.
Burnham slowly backs away from the wall, but Junior turns round to listen with his other ear.
Turn the gas off right now.
Suddenly, the gas ignites in a blue flash. Inside the room, Meg's knocked to the ground, but outside, the end of the hose comes away from the wall, flailing around the men in a burst of flames. Meg looks up at the blue cloud of burning gas billowing at the ceiling and tries to protect Sarah until finally the flames peter out. The gas cylinder shoots upwards, knocking a hole in the ceiling. Junior's entire arm is on fire. He waves it around frantically, then Burnham quickly covers it up.
Bitch, I'm coming in there!
Calm the fuck down.
On one of the monitors, Junior gestures violently. The panic room's filled with smoke.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Promise me, you'll never do anything like that.
I won't.
Meg hugs her.
They're moving. At least they're still moving in there.
Junior's arm is still smoking. Burnham sits down on the floor.
Ow! Ow! Ah!
What? Talk to him.
Please, man, give it a rest.
Rain is still beating down outside, pattering onto the end of the rusty metal pipe leading to the panic room. Sarah stretches her arm down the pipe, then pulls it out again. She can see into a room in a building across the street. She sits up, glances at her mother, then goes over to rummage in one of the crates. She pulls out a small flashlight and shines it at her mother. Then she lies down beside the pipe again and pushes the flashlight as far down it as she can reach. She starts flicking it on and off, trying to send a Morse code SOS message to the room across the street. The small beam of light dazzles on and off, highly visible through the dark, dreary night.
That Morse code? SOS. Where'd you learn that? Titanic.
Through the window across the street, someone shifts on their bed. Meanwhile, in Meg's bedroom, Raoul kicks the empty gas cylinder, then goes over to Junior.
We gotta talk. Downstairs.
Junior glares at him, and Burnham gets up.
No, no, no. Not you.
Raoul follows Junior downstairs. In the panic room, Sarah's still relaying her Morse code message. Sarah's wrist monitor beeps. Meg looks at her daughter with concern.
Look, there's been a change here. And $100,000, that's not enough. Not for this bullshit. I want a third of whatever's in that room up there.
Fine! Okay. Full share, one third. Congratulations. You bought a black ski mask, you made $1 million. Your parents will be really proud.
Still, the beam of light flicks on and off through the rain outside, focusing on the room in the building opposite. The person in bed shifts again, then sits up and looks over at the window.
God.
And let me straighten you out with some other shit. You better get control of your goddamn expert. I'm not losing my half of that fucking money because
of you. Slow down, half! What did you sleep through grade school? 5 seconds ago, it was a third.
The man opposite puts on his glasses.
I'm just letting you know that guy's a problem. But this wasn't my idea, so he's your problem.
Hey, you know what? You're right. It wasn't your idea. None of this was your idea. It was my idea.
As the torch flicks on and off relentlessly, the man eventually gets up and goes over to his window. He pauses for a long moment, staring over at Meg's house.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Let's hope this guy's the next Boy Scout.
The man peers out at the strange light. But their voices are drowned out by the driving rain outside. Then the man lowers his blinds. Meg and Sarah look defeated.
We're never gonna get out of here.
Meg touches her wrist gently. Meanwhile, Burnham goes to stand at the doorway of Meg's bedroom.
I'm the loving grandson who put in the fucking time with the old man every goddamn weekend for 2 years. Talking to him, dressing him, walking him, feeding him.
Are you done?
No. I'm the one the old man finally told about the safe. I'm the one who found the guy who built it. And I'm the one who convinced him to break into it.
Burnham's just out of view of the camera.
Wait a minute. What?
Bedroom's empty. And where are they?
Two of them, on the stairs.
And where's the third guy? I left my cell phone by the bed.
Burnham looks at the door of the panic room.
I earned that money, and I will not let you jeopardize my whole fucking plan because you have a problem relating to others. Got it!
If I don't come back, you close this door.
Mom,
just do what I say.
Her hand hovers over the button.
He touches me again, I'll shoot him.
Ah, Christ!
Wait!
Burnham's now just inside of the hallway camera.
Any other schoolyard bullshit you want to settle, can we get the fuck back to work?
Don't you take your tone with me, jerkwad, because I'll shove it up your ass and snap it off.
You know what? You're a bus driver. Raoul. You live in Flatbush, so don't start spouting some Elmore Leonard bullshit you just heard, because I saw that movie, too.
What is this? Huh? I got some news for you.
Burnham heads downstairs.
Go. Go!
In slow motion, Meg hits the button to open the door and runs across her bedroom. Burnham's standing unawares halfway down the stairs, talking to Raoul and Junior. She dives between the overturned mattress and the bedstead, grasping desperately for her cell phone. Downstairs, the men continue their dispute. Meg peers underneath the mattress, then spins round at the sound of raised voices. As the men continue to argue downstairs, she bends down and peers under the bedstead, spying her cell phone under it. She stretches her arm out under the bed, but the phone's just out of reach. Sarah stands at the door of the panic room watching. As Meg stretches further, her other arm knocks a lamp off the bedside table. Burnham spins round at the sound. Meg grasps desperately for her phone, but it knocks even further away. The three men race up the stairs and Sarah spins her head round to watch them on the monitors. Now Meg's grabbed the phone. She pulls it out from under the bed, stands up, then hurtles across the floor to the panic room. She dives into the room and Sarah immediately hits the red button to close the door, just as Burnham appears outside it.
Fuck! She got some. What'd she get?
No.
Charger! She has a cell phone.
No! Signal. Come on. Yeah, signal.
She paces up and down the room, holding up the cell phone, then remembers the pipe and crouches down beside it.
I don't think we'll be talking on our cell phone from in there.
Why not?
You can't call out from in there.
No signal.
As she looks at the wall phone in the room, a thought occurs to her and she stands up.
This line, but I hooked up the main line. If we can fight it, we can cut into it.
I can't go to prison, man. I'm not built for that shit.
Meg wrenches off a covering high up in the wall, revealing another shaft. Outside, Burnham steps closer to the wall to listen.
Be careful.
Meg searches around the numerous cables and wire in the shaft, then spots one with a label attached. She stretches for it, but it's just out of reach.
Get the phone.
It doesn't come off.
I will rip it off.
As Burnham's listening outside, he spies the phone socket in the wall below him.
Screwdriver. Phillips.
While Sarah struggles to rip out the wall phone, Meg's still reaching in vain for the cable.
June, when I asked you to cut the phone lines, did you cut the main line in the basement? Or did you just cut the cord on the phone in the kitchen?
Junior thinks hard. Inside the room, Sarah's got the phone off the wall, and Meg finally reaches the phone wire. Burnham unscrews the socket outside, then laughs to himself, until he sees the wire disappearing into the wall. He rushes out.
All right, strip this and expose the wires. What are we doing?
I have no idea.
Burnham thunders down the stairs, followed by Raoul. Meanwhile, Sarah rips off the outer casing of the wire with her teeth, exposing the metal filaments inside. As Burnham runs down into the basement, Raoul picks up his sledgehammer. Burnham tries the light, but it doesn't work.
You got it.
Yeah. Here.
Okay. Yell.
She begins to twist the wires from the two cables together. Burnham runs over to his tool bag and finds a flashlight, then heads back down into the basement. Meg plugs the new cable into the phone. She quickly dials 911. Down in the basement, Burnham's frantically searching for the phone wires with his flashlight. Raoul joins him.
911 emergency.
Yes, this is 38 West 94th Street. And no, I can't.
Burnham finds the metal box housing the phone wires and opens it.
Call Dad.
Junior's in the bathroom.
How do you live in New York and not have a single Percocet?
Stephen. Hello? Put Stephen on the line.
Who is it?
It's Meg.
Do you know what time it is?
Put him on the phone, bitch.
In the basement, Burnham's pulling at hundreds of wires.
Move.
Oh, Stephen, you gotta help us.
Move!
There are three men downstairs. They broke into the...
Raoul smashed the cable box with his sledgehammer. Meg looks at the phone in desperation, then replaces the receiver and tosses it to one side. She puts her head in her hands.
He'll do something.
No, he won't.
Yeah, he'll call the police.
You don't know her, Mom. She won't let him.
No. He knows that there's trouble. He heard me. He's right across the park. Right? That's why we got houses so close to each other, just in case we needed each other. He'll help us.
He won't.
Yes, he will! I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I was trying not to tell you.
What?
I'm dizzy and hungry.
All she's got is NyQuil and fucking Vidal.
Looks like the gas idea didn't work out so well.
Whose fault was that?
Oh, this is impossible.
What's the plan now, Hot Rod?
This is worse than possible. This is unpleasant.
Drink this. All right, drink lots of water. You dropped to the low 40s. That means we just gotta get your blood sugar back up. Can you hear me okay?
Hmm? Mom, I'm just a little dizzy, not deaf.
Oh, great. Smart ass. That's excellent. All right, did you see anything in here? Any candy bars or something sweet?
Uh-uh.
Oh, let's check it again.
Mom, I did it.
Listen, we gotta stay calm, okay? If we stay calm, everything will be fine. All right? Stay calm.
You're making me nervous.
I'm sorry.
What if I keep dropping?
You won't. I'll figure something out.
You know he's right. There's no way we're getting into that room.
What are you talking about?
I just gotta be honest with myself here. I am not a person who needs to be involved with anything quite so harrowing or perilous at this point in my life.
You're giving up?
Hell yes. I don't need the fucking aggravation. I'll make an anonymous phone call on Monday. They'll find the floor safe. I'll inherit.
David, Jeffrey, Catherine, David, 5 grandkids, 6% inheritance tax. Fuck, I'll still put away 800 or 900 grand and keep my goddamn hair.
Take it. Go out and get loaded.
Wait a minute. Say what you just said again.
Junior looks at him nervously.
Huh?
Say that shit about the money again, baby cakes.
When, before?
Yeah, before.
You were splitting up the money in your head and you said you'd put away 800 or 900 grand, right?
What are you doing?
That was after inheritance tax, which makes it more than 1.5 million gross.
So now you're a tax attorney. I'm out of here.
Wait a minute.
Come on. The sugar and everything, even places you don't expect it, like ketchup. Gross. Hey, travel kit.
Plus, you name like 8 other people you gotta split it with. So that's like 10 or 12 million bucks in the safe. And a fuck up like you has gotta be getting less than everybody else. So now I don't even know what to think.
You're adding up money you'll never touch, buddy.
How much is really in there?
They're heading downstairs.
Mouthwash. Saccharine.
Hey, I'm talking to you. Answer me.
Okay, fine, there's more.
And when were you gonna tell us this minor economic detail?
Doesn't matter now, it's totally fucking moot. Why are we having this conversation? What are you thinking?
How did you expect to get away with this? Did you think that I was gonna open that safe and then me and Raoul were gonna wait downstairs while you picked out your share?
What the fuck is the matter with you? You got us into this mess, and you were gonna fuck us?
You got yourself into this. You're the one with the custody lawyers up your ass. Your eyes were as big as fucking saucers when I told you about the gig, so don't play innocent. Things didn't work out. Play bastard.
On the monitor, Sarah sees Junior striding towards the door.
Vince? Sugar-free.
I'm opening that safe. You leave here, you don't get nothing.
It's looking doubtful there, big guy.
I'm gonna split the money with Raul, but I don't ever want to see you again. Cops show up on my doorstep, we will know who sent them, and we will fucking find you.
Junior opens the door.
See you, Burnham. Later, Raul.
Raul shoots him in the head.
Mom!
Meg quickly shields Sarah's eyes. Raul walks over to Junior's body and drags it back into the house.
Ride the fucking sound car up 125th Street a couple of times. Think you know all about it. You know nothing about me.
Sarah, no. Listen to me. Go to the corner, shut your eyes, and don't turn around.
Okay.
Raul turns to look at Burnham.
You should see the look on your face.
What's happening? Don't move. Don't you fucking move. Come here. Come here.
Hey.
Don't you. Hey. Shut it. Lock it. And get the fuck away from it.
Raul pistol whips the man who's just arrived.
Stop it, you fucking what?
Clown? Idiot? Fucking asshole? Who's the clown now?
Me.
That's right.
Burn.
Who's got the gun?
You.
Remember that. Find out who the fuck that is.
Burnham crouches down beside the man.
Give me your wallet.
He finds a driver's license.
Stephen Altman.
Then he notices the name Altman on one of the removals boxes.
Did your wife give you a call, Stephen?
What did she say? Phone's dead. Did you call anybody else? Did you call the fucking cops, Stephen?
He points his gun at Stephen.
No. He's telling the truth.
Yeah, he probably is. Because when I do this, people don't lie.
What? What do you want?
Get us into that room up there.
I can't.
Yeah, you can. You're full of ideas. You just gotta squeeze one out.
But you want me to just make something up?
You got to the count of three. Then you end up like Junior over there. One, squeeze.
This is ridiculous.
Two, squeeze.
I don't know what to tell you.
Three.
Wait! Okay. I got an idea. Maybe.
Help. Rubber Soul. Yesterday and Today. Magical Mystery Tour. White Album.
Stay warm, baby. Stay warm.
Meg turns to see a close-up of Steven's driver's license on one of the monitors.
Oh, God. Dad?
Meg grabs her daughter and they both look at the screen. Burnham pulls the license away from the camera while Raul forces Stephen to his knees, then kicks him to the floor and starts laying into him.
Take it easy. Open the door!
Raul picks up the spotlight.
Meg. Don't open the door!
Don't!
Raul hits him with the light.
Just make it look good. Don't you tell me what the fuck!
Burnham holds out his arms to the camera.
Open the door! Don't open it! Knock it off! You killed him, they're never gonna open that door.
Burnham throws his jacket over the bedroom camera so that the monitor goes black inside the panic room. Sarah's having a seizure. Meg strokes her head, trying to comfort her. After a moment, Sarah's muscles begin to relax again and her toes unclench. Quickly, Meg gets up and goes over to the monitors. She sees Burnham dragging a body down to the lower ground floor. She puts some cushions beside her daughter. Sarah's unconscious. Downstairs, Burnham drags the body over to a chair that's covered in plastic. Stephen's glasses lie broken on the floor of the bedroom.
Stephen.
Meg heads over to the body lying face down on the bed, then quickly runs to the door. She pauses for a moment, then creeps quickly across the landing. The body in the chair downstairs is wearing Raoul's ski mask. Meg runs up to the second floor. Meanwhile, in the bedroom below, the body wearing Stephen's coat shifts slightly, then turns over. It's Raoul. Downstairs, Burnham pulls the ski mask off Stephen's head and makes for the stairs. On the top floor, Meg runs to the fridge in Sarah's bedroom, knocking out some bottles of water in her haste. She quickly finds a small black bag and unzips it. From inside, she pulls out an insulin syringe in a red plastic case. Meanwhile, Burnham comes back into her bedroom and tosses Raoul his ski mask.
It's got blood on it. You might want to wear it inside, huh? Get your tubes.
Burnham walks over to the panic room. On the floor above, Meg moves over to Sarah's bedroom door. Steeling herself, she creeps out onto the landing. Now Burnham's looking down at Sarah, who's lying trembling on the panic room floor.
What's this?
Meg stops dead in her tracks.
It's your kid. What happened to him?
Who gives a fuck?
Meg peers through the banisters, her eyes widening in horror as she sees the man she thought was Stephen pull on his ski mask in her bedroom. In the panic room, Burnham checks each of the video machines under the monitors for tapes. They're all empty. Then he glances over at Sarah and wipes his face, looking worried. Meanwhile, Meg creeps along the landing upstairs.
Hurry up, get your stuff.
Burnham picks up his tool bag. Quickly but quietly, Meg makes her way down the stairs as Burnham enters the panic room again. She sees Raoul moving about in her bedroom, shifting boxes away from behind the door. Quickly, Meg runs into another room at the other end of the landing. Raoul hides behind her bedroom door, listening.
Hey, lady.
Burnham kneels beside Sarah. Meg creeps out from behind a door.
What are you doing? Huh? What are you doing?
Meg creeps down the passage that connects with her bedroom. She spies Raoul's gun as he raises it behind the door.
We've got your kid.
She moves further down the passage towards the bedroom.
Come on back down here.
Let's get this over with.
Suddenly, Meg runs into her bedroom, slamming the door into Raoul and coming face to face with Burnham. Raoul quickly grabs her, sending the insulin kit skittering across the floor. Meg struggles with Raoul, who falls backwards onto the floor. As Burnham hits the button to close the panic room, Meg hurls the insulin kit towards the door. It slams on Raoul's fingers. Sarah's trapped inside with the two men. Meg slides to the floor outside. Burnham struggles to get through to Raoul, who's flailing about in agony, his hand still caught in the door.
She's got your gun! Stop screaming! Stop!
Meg spots the gun under Stephen's coat and grabs it, then aims it at the door with trembling hands. Inside the panic room, Raoul tries to stifle his screams.
I know you've got the gun.
You put the gun down and step away from the door.
Meg runs to the control panel.
You gotta open the door. My daughter is very sick.
She needs an injection.
You hear me?
Open the door so I can give her a shot. All right. I swear to God, I'll kill you both.
I'll open the door,
you'll shoot us.
So give her the shot yourself!
Give her the shot!
Burnham looks down at the insulin kit on the floor, then reaches down and picks it up. He crouches down beside Sarah.
Do you need this?
She nods weakly.
Can you do this yourself?
She shakes her head.
What happens if you don't get it?
Coma. Die.
Meg's ramming against the door.
Fuck! Open it! Put the gun
down on the floor. Go downstairs, all the way downstairs. And I'll give it a shot, all right?
Still holding onto the gun, Meg runs out of the room and downstairs. Burnham watches her on the monitor. Meg runs under a camera and mouths an obscenity at it. Burnham opens the panic room door and Raoul pulls his hand inside. Meg hurtles up the stairs again, but the door slides shut before she can get there. She lowers the gun, panting.
Step outside, I'll kill her. If I see a uniform inside this house, I'll cut her fucking throat. Do you understand?
Stephen slowly comes to in the chair downstairs.
Yes. But please, just give it the shot.
You don't fucking do it. While we're in here, she'll call the cops.
Are you going to open the safe?
As Burnham busies himself with the insulin, Sarah stares at Raoul.
Don't you look at me.
She shuts her eyes. Burnham leans in close to her face.
Hey. All I know about this is what I see on TV. You got to talk me through this.
She nods, and he looks down at the kit.
This right here? It's this?
She nods, and he opens the red plastic case and takes out the syringe and vial of insulin. He inserts the needle into the vial and draws out the liquid.
Nice house you guys got. Your mom's rich.
Rich. Mom's just mad.
Meg's pacing up and down in the room outside. Burnham lifts up Sarah's top, exposing her belly.
Like this?
Tap it.
He taps the syringe. Then he aims the needle at her belly and gives her the injection.
I wish I could have put my kid in a place like this. It's not that I didn't try. Just sometimes things, they don't work out the way you want them to.
He lifts up the empty syringe.
Duff. It wasn't supposed to be like this. Yeah, it all worked out.
Thanks, Burnham.
He looks at the name tag on his boiler suit.
It's supposed to be like this.
She's gonna be okay. I gave her a shot. She's all right. It'll be over soon.
She cocks the gun and gets up. Raoul grabs some bandages from a crate just before Burnham closes it and slides it across the floor. Then he pulls up the carpet to reveal a trapdoor. Meg comes downstairs.
Stephen. Oh my God. Can you move?
Not much. I think my arm is broken.
Burnham rolls back the carpet fully, then lifts the trapdoor lid, revealing a safe's combination lock. Raoul bandages his hand. Slumped in a corner, Sarah watches as Burnham fetches his large tool bag.
Raise your arm. Come on, raise your arm.
Stephen lifts it a little, then writhes in agony. Burnham switches on an industrial drill, which is positioned directly above the safe, then attaches a bit.
Try again. Come on, try again.
Meg, please don't do anything stupid.
They're gonna kill us.
Just do everything they ask. Be okay then.
Steve.
On a monitor, Sarah sees some cops ringing the doorbell. Meg's approaching the door when Raoul spots them too.
Holy shit! She called the goddamn cops!
The police! You called the police?
Of course I called them. You scared the shit out of me.
She killed the kid. She just killed her own kid.
She gives Stephen the gun.
No, her husband must have called.
Foreign son of a bitch, I told you.
Where is she?
Meg reaches the front door.
There. The fuck's she doing?
She pulls on a sweater. Then she pushes the sofa away from the door. Burnham notices her waving at the camera.
She's gonna hit him.
I'm just trying to unlock.
She opens the door, feigning sleepiness.
Yeah?
Is everything okay?
You all right, ma'am?
What time is it?
It's a little after four.
You got a call, ma'am?
Somebody called you?
Can we come in?
What do you want?
We'd like to come in.
No, you can't come in.
Ma'am, you sure you're all right?
I'm fine.
Ma'am, you don't look so good.
Sarah watches wide-eyed as her mum manages to keep the cops on the doorstep.
You don't look so hot yourself, Officer King. Come on, I'm freezing out here.
There are three. Your husband said you called for help. That you said there were three right before you got cut off.
Oh, that phone call.
And your neighbors across the courtyard called in about some loud shouts or a loud speaker of some kind.
How is the TV? It's off now.
Can I just ask you one question? What was the end of that sentence?
Huh?
When you said there are three, what was the rest?
My husband and I just split up. Yeah, it's my first night in a new house. I admit I was a little drunk. And the sentence, if you insist on knowing, was going to be, there are three things that I will do for you if you come over here and jump into bed with me right now. Thank God I came to my senses before I said all that, and I hung up so nobody would ever have to know what I was thinking. Unless, of course, two policemen came to my door in the middle of the night and interrogated me.
So, Rick, you want to go? Or do you want her to tell you which three things?
Rick looks at Meg, unconvinced.
Ma'am. If there's something you want to say to us, but maybe you can't say it right now, you might want to make some kind of a signal, like blinking your eyes a few times, something like that. That's something you could do safely.
After a long pause, she shakes her head and smiles wryly.
Yeah. You guys are good. I mean, like if there was somebody in the house or something. You and the train, you guys, huh? No, I'm fine. I'm fine. Cross my heart.
In the panic room, everyone's holding their breath.
Sorry to disturb you, ma'am.
Night, man.
Meg locks the door, then peers out of the spy hole to see the two cops leaving. Meanwhile, back in the panic room.
This kid has seen my face.
You know, that's not my problem.
No, it is. You're here with me. You're on the hook, too. Do one. Same price for the rest.
Stay the fuck away from me.
You know how this is gonna end.
Seeing the cops approach their car, Meg slumps with relief. She glances up at the camera trained on the hall, then heads back into the house. Sarah covers her ears to block out the sound of the drill piece penetrating the combination lock. Meg comes down into the kitchen and pauses when she sees Junior's body lying on the floor. Upstairs, Sarah uncovers her ears while Burnham puts a short metal tube into the hole he's drilled into the safe, then connects a handle and twists it. Meg rifles through kitchen drawers until she finds some keys. Then she notices Raoul's sledgehammer leaning against the side. As Burnham's lifting off the combination lock, Meg's lifting up the sledgehammer. She uses it on one of the cameras. In the panic room, only Sarah notices the monitor go black. Burnham's too busy with the safe, and Raoul's slumped in agony in a corner. She slips her insulin kit under her legs to hide it. Behind Burnham's back, one by one, the other monitors start to go dead. Sarah sees her mum approaching a camera on the stairs. The monitor goes dead. Raoul looks at Sarah suspiciously and she turns her head away from the monitors. But he pulls himself up to look at the screens. Meg's wandering around looking for more cameras to knock out. In the panic room, only four of the monitors are still active. Raoul and Berman watch as another one bites the dust.
Why the hell didn't we do that?
Sarah opens her insulin kit.
The fuck is she doing? What the fuck does she think she's doing?
She got your gun, listen, what the fuck she thinks she's doing? Who told you to bring a gun in the first place? Just let me drill, man.
As he continues to drill, Sarah slips a couple of syringes into her hand. Meg locks one door, then closes another. Burnham carries on drilling until finally he breaks through. He lifts the drill bit, then pushes the machine to one side, leaving it still switched on. Carrying the sledgehammer, Meg opens some cupboard doors as she walks along a passageway. Burnham blows the metal shavings away from around the combination lock. As Meg smashes her dressing table mirror lights, Burnham inserts a small camera into the hole so he can see the inner mechanism of the combination lock. Meg pads barefoot across the broken glass, then closes the door after her. Burnham finds the first combination. Meg listens on a landing, then heads through a door, while in the panic room, the combination lock slots into place. Burnham carefully lifts out the camera. Downstairs, Meg leaves a room door open, then takes out a light. Burnham turns the safe's handle, then Raoul comes over to watch as he heaves open the door.
Empty!
Come on, man.
Burnham lifts up the safe's fake floor, revealing a compartment beneath. He then starts throwing out the contents until he comes to a brown paper envelope. Meg drags the sledgehammer over to Stephen, then heaves his chair around. Burnham opens the envelope.
Bearer bonds.
He counts them.
Why are we doing this?
Because it's gonna come to that.
It's 22. $22 million.
I'm lying, little shit!
Let's get out of here.
He puts the bonds in his boiler suit.
Lift.
Meg uses a light stand to wedge Stephen's gun hand into position. Burnham's packing his tools away.
Leave that. Christ, I'll buy you new tools.
Burnham looks at Sarah.
You're gonna be okay.
She nods. Downstairs, all is eerily quiet. Junior's legs are lying motionless on the kitchen floor. The passageway where Meg opened the cupboard doors and her bedroom are deserted. The panic room door slides open, and cautiously Burnham steps out first with Raoul and Sarah following. Raoul stops to pick up two of his fingers from the doorway. Burnham removes his jacket from the camera, puts it on, then goes to open the bedroom door. It's locked. After thinking for a moment, he moves round some packing boxes and tries another door. It's locked as well. Silently, he moves a couple of steps, then peers around the corner into the adjoining passageway. With the coast clear, he passes through into the ensuite bathroom doorway and reaches his hand around to flick on the light switch. The light doesn't come on. Meg hears him downstairs. The bathroom's locked as well.
It's glass. Gotcha.
Burnham lifts Sarah into his arms and walks over the broken shards of mirror littering the floor. Meanwhile, Meg creeps past the bottom of the staircase. He sets Sarah down in the doorway, then passes into a room filled with packing boxes. The others follow him. Stephen's still sitting in the chair downstairs. Meg unscrews a light, then listens. Burnham looks out and sees the landing's empty.
Hurry up.
What's the glass?
Burnham heads out onto the landing, and Raoul follows with his hand on Sarah's shoulder. They pass the elevator door, where inside, Meg holds her breath. Stephen's chair is facing the staircase. The stairwell is deserted as Burnham, Raoul, and Sarah cross the landing. Taking it slowly, one step at a time, Burnham leads the way down the stairs. Meg stays where she is, listening. As they're reaching the bottom of the stairs, Meg raises the sledgehammer. Stephen switches on the light and Raoul pulls Sarah behind a pillar. The gun's pointing straight at Burnham.
Wait. Wait. You don't want to do that.
Dad, don't shoot him!
Let my daughter go.
We're finished. Your daughter's fine. We're gonna go out the back door. You're never gonna see us again.
Let her go.
Okay. It's okay. Let's go. Let's go.
Burnham takes a few steps to the side, and Raoul comes out using Sarah as a shield.
Let go of her.
Put that gun down.
Sam, come here.
Put that fucking gun down.
Do as I say.
Be crazy. Just let her go.
Let her go!
Meg creeps up behind Raoul and knocks him into the stairwell with a sledgehammer. Burnham kicks out a French door. Raoul's lying in a heap on the stairs, whilst Burnham's running down the fire escape outside.
Are you okay?
Yes.
Burnham tries to climb a wall.
Did they hurt you?
No.
They touch you?
No.
Sarah's eyes widen as she sees Raoul climbing the stairs towards them. Meg drags her up.
Stephen, shoot him! Shoot him!
Stephen fires but misses, so Meg attacks with a sledgehammer but gets knocked to the floor. Raoul pushes Stephen's chair over and the gun goes flying. Burnham hears the screams and looks back at the house. Inside, Raoul grabs the sledgehammer and uses it to lever himself to his knees. Then, using it as a crutch, he crosses the floor. He grabs Meg's legs, then climbs on top of her. As the two of them are fighting, Sarah gets out the syringes. Meg struggles violently while Stephen tries to reach the gun. Sarah stands up and gets ready with the syringes. She leaps onto Raoul's back and stabs him with the needles. He punches her across the room. She lands in a fireplace and starts screaming. Someone picks up the gun from under Stephen's hand as Meg watches Raoul lift the sledgehammer about to smash her head in. Burnham shoots Raoul in the head and he falls to the floor alongside Meg. Stephen slumps against the French doors and Meg slides away from Raoul. Burnham turns to Sarah.
You're gonna be okay now.
He puts the gun on a shelf, then slips out of the house. A SWAT team bursts in through the front door. Sarah crawls over to her dad.
Are you okay?
Burnham makes it as far as the wall. It's Rick, the cop from earlier. Meg looks at Sarah and Stephen.
It's okay. Come on.
Burnham drops to his knees.
I want to see the top of your head! Do you hear me? Open your hands!
He opens his hands, releasing the bonds which are carried away by the wind. Sarah's still sitting at her dad's feet.
It's okay. You're gonna be fine. Everything's gonna be fine.
Outside, Burnham's on his knees with his hands up. The rain splashes his face as he looks sadly at the ground. Inside, Meg stares into space, her face pale and splattered with blood. On a sunny autumnal day in the park, Sarah's head rests on Meg's lap as she consults the classifieds.
This sounds interesting. Here's a two-bedroom with den, or third bedroom, new kitchen, original baths, 70s east.
I thought you liked the west side.
61st and Central Park West. Bank foreclosure must sell luxury doorman building. Health club. Concierge.
Concierge.
What's that?
That's French for superintendent.
What's WEA mean?
That's West End Avenue.
81st and West End Avenue. Three bedrooms plus den or fourth bedroom. Spacious living room. Cathedral windows.
You need all that space?
She strokes her daughter's hair.
Ah, how about this? West 83rd, two bedroom, doorman building. Park block, partial views, bright and cheery flat, high ceilings and wood floors.
Yeah. That one. I like the sound of that one.